We are in the middle of 26. Hopefully we can finish 26 tonight. Chaf Vav, Perek Chaf Beis. Chaf Vav, Chaf Beis, 26-22 in Mishlei. Let me just open up there in both of my versions here. So we talked about this already last week. We started talking about the complainer. No one here knows any complainers, but there are plenty of them. Complainers, yeah. Divrei Nirgan, Kimis Lahamim. A bunch of the psukim tonight, actually all our, the discussion around them is all focused on one word that can be interpreted in multiple ways. This word, Kimis Lahamim, is not a common word. Rashi says that the word mislahamim is connected to the word mislachamim, which is, you know, understandable. The hay and the ches are very similar looking, and they also have very similar sounds. They both come from the throat. So as many grammarians will say, or Hebrew historians will say, that the letters are some letters are connected not just, you know, audibly and not just visually, but also thematically, that the letters sometimes are interchangeable. Rav Hirsch talks about this a lot, especially if you have two of the three letters of one shoresh similar, and then the third one, you know, changes slightly. Oftentimes the words are connected. The way that they sound is related to what their meanings are. So here it says, Rashi, Divrei Nirgan kimis lahamim. The words of a complainer are like fighting. Kimislahamim, they're like fighting. What does that mean? They're like fighting. So if you understand the next few words, you probably understand what fighting means. Vehem yardu chadre baten. And they go down to the depths of one's belly, to the pit of the stomach. So what does that mean, the pit of the stomach? So exactly, they cut deep, like kimislachamim, according to Rashi, means that this is like almost an act of war, not literal war, but an act of aggression. The person who's complaining is trying to be oppositional, and what Rashi is saying, and the Mesudas David really, you know, expands upon it, Rashi, or Mesudas David says, Divrei mislonein hemakashim kimakot hamishabrot. Okay, it's interesting because someone else, we're going to see a parish again afterwards that uses the same word mishaber in a different way. Ve'od hema yordim chadri baten.
Hey!
We got some background noise here.
Is that a complaining hey? Or?
Yeah, right. Says the Mitzvah David that the complainer's words are difficult. They are piercing until the belly. But the actual hitting, the actual hit is superficial, but it goes deep. When it comes to superficial wounds, those are actually easy to heal. That's not the case when it comes to blows which are, you know, deeper. Similarly, it is difficult to heal the wounds of a complaint. It's a very interesting phrase. Difficult to heal the wounds. They go deep. So, I don't know. I think the pshat of the Mesudas David and Rashi, I guess, is that when a person complains, it's clear and obvious that they're trying to hurt you, and it actually does hurt you. And it hurts you even more. It hurts you even more than someone else who is maybe giving you constructive feedback. I mean, the constructive feedback, again, it doesn't flesh out the analogy, but the constructive feedback is something which is, you know, outwardly, visibly, not hurtful, but damaging. Because, look, you did something wrong, or you have to do something better, and whatever. But you'll heal from that. You will heal from that constructive criticism. However, the complaint is not the complainer is not saying what he's saying in order to give constructive feedback, in order for you to heal. He's trying to hurt you. The complainer is trying to hurt you, and that lasts a lot longer. It's personal. It's not meant to heal. So that's, I think, one way to understand it in a pshat level. I think there's another level which can be understood in the sense that not only is it yardu chadri batan, but, and this might be opposed to mitzvahs of it, I don't know, but it is not even visible on the surface, meaning there are some blows which are from the surface and then it goes inwards, right? Like you think about a knife, you know, it punctures the skin and then goes deeper. But then there are some kind of blows that are internal, entirely internal. You don't even know that they're happening. And I think maybe there's something to this, to this effect, in the sense that a complainer, you know that they complain. You know people are, you know, I'm sure you know people that, you know, they live like hammers in search of a nail. That's their life. They're just looking for someone to complain about. They're stupors, as I call them. They sit on their stoop and they wait for people to pass by and they just complain about, look at that person, the way he's wearing his clothes. Look at that person, doesn't say good Shabbos to me. Look at that person, he never says hi to me. Look at that person, he doesn't carry himself well. Look at that person, he doesn't eat well. Look at that person, he's overweight. Look at that person, right? They just, everything they see is a nail, and they're a hammer. They're just complain, complain, complain. So that kind of person, if they complain to you, so then you almost ignore them, right? Not exactly a boy who cried wolf because of, but in a similar sense, like, okay, this guy complains about everything. And therefore we think that that person is not hurting us. Because it's just, you know, we brush it off. You know, the external wound isn't even there. But deep down, there's something that still stays with you. And maybe that's what, I don't know, maybe that's what Shlomo HaMelech is saying here. It's yardu chadrei batan, you don't see it on the outside. It doesn't pierce through the skin. But it hurts you. It hurts you. And the next time, you know, you see that person, you're going to remember what they said. It might not be staying with you as if like it's bothering you and you have, you know, what to, you know, you have what to worry about. But it still gets to you on the inside. It's still subtly still there. Maybe that's what it means. I don't know. The Ralbag, however, has a different take. The Ralbag says, and this is, I let's see it inside, but I feel like this concept is very applicable to at least my life. I don't know about everybody else's. Divrei Nirgan, says the Ralbag, the word kimistach lahamim, Rashi said it meant like fighting or aggression or like a, you know, a hit of some kind, an injury of some kind. Heim kimo mishtabrim, not that the blow is breaking, the blow is aggressive or, you know, punctures, like Rashi is saying, but rather that the words themselves are broken. What does it mean that words are broken? Says the Ralbag like this, Kichein derech haksilim v'hamisach sachim sheyera'u atzmam ki'ilu yishtaru divrayem v'omrim. Their words are, you know, partial. They're broken. They're partial words. V'omrim lo esaper lecha hakol. I can't even tell you the whole thing. I can't even tell you all of it. Oh, lo omer lecha hakol, or they're just not going to tell you everything. And therefore, the other person who's listening thinks it's a lot more. Right? I don't know if you ever see people like this. I feel like it happens to me all the time. Within a statement, but also in terms of like a person who's trying to represent more than it is in terms of the people that are on board with him. Right? So on the one hand, you'll find somebody who says, you know, people are saying, you ever get that one? People have told me, a bunch of people say, I heard that. So who said that? Right? That's always my response. The people are saying. So what does that mean, people? It means you and your friend have the same opinion. So that's people. That's two people. Two people is plural. People are saying, okay, so I've got, you know, 175, 180 members in this shul. And now you and your friend have a feedback. So therefore, people are saying. Why do they say it like that? Why do they say people are saying? Because what they want to represent is that there's this big group of people. Tons of people are saying. Most of the shul is saying this. Say, wait a second. Tell me who's saying it, right? Because more often than not, it's me, my friend, and then somebody else was standing there and they didn't object. So you've got two people and then one person you're trying to sort of loop in. And then all of a sudden it's like, so people aren't saying this. In fact, there are 177 people that are not saying this. And it's just you and maybe some two other people that are saying, so now I have to decide. So am I going to do something for three people against 177 people? Now, obviously, it depends on the situation. It depends how many people know about what happened. You know, there's a program and somebody didn't like this one thing about the program. Okay, thank you for the feedback. Oh, well, what are you going to do about it? Probably not. We'll take it for the next time. We'll take it, you know, we'll take it seriously. So the next time it doesn't happen, no, I think you should issue an apology. I think you have to write an email. I think people have to know about this. Like, okay, it's like you're the only guy. You're the only person that really cares. So at a certain point, it's almost like, as the Rabbag is saying, they're doing it on purpose to make it seem like, and this, by the way, is a political tactic. I don't know if people are familiar with this. You know, people talk a lot about this thing called cancel culture. I don't even know what it is. People define it in different ways. But one of the strategies of cancel culture is that if somebody says the wrong thing, and that person is, you know, a radio personality, or he's got a podcast, or he's got some, you know, show or something, so then they'll galvanize together. Who's they? We've got like 20 people. 20 people will call up the radio station and say, hey, so-and-so said something we don't like. We think it's, you know, a disgrace that you have it on the air. We think that it's, you know, it's really not becoming of your radio station. I used to be a listener for many, many years, and now this is the people you put on, you platform this opinion, whatever. So 20 different people. And this radio station is like, oh my gosh, we got like 5 people to call a day. 20 people are calling our station saying the same thing. This must be a worldwide complaint. Everybody must say this. But when reality is, you know, these 20 people do this for a living. You know, and they call each other and say, okay, everybody pounce. But it's not representative of the whole audience. It's not representative of more people. It is a coordinated attack. But the radio stations don't know any better. And therefore, they see, even though in the way of the Ra'abag, it's kemo mishdabrim. It's partial. Because what is the radio station? If 20 people are calling and saying that, how many more people actually think that? And that's how they get you, right? That's how the campaign works. They make it seem like there's this overwhelming opinion, not because hundreds of people have called in, but because a significant group of people have called in, but it was all coordinated. It wasn't like, it wasn't an organic people calling up, but that's how they make it seem. So same thing here. The person says, and in the Ra'abag's case, it's more you know, on a micro level, right? A person says, you know, so-and-so doesn't treat me right. He did this and that and a bunch of other things, right? He didn't answer my question. And when he answered it, you know, he didn't give me all the information and a bunch of other stuff. Wait a second. So you said one thing, okay, maybe he was busy when he didn't answer your question. Maybe, you know, he didn't have all the information himself. So what's the bunch of other stuff? He said, no, I can't even talk to you right now. I can't even. You know, so one of those like dramatic, like I can't talk. The rest of it is just, it's too traumatic for me, right? So this is like a tactic people use in order to make something seem bigger than it really is. When in reality, they had an emotional response, and that emotion is a real response, but they don't necessarily have the maturity to realize maybe it's not as big of an issue that you thought, and maybe you just need to give yourself a second. Maybe you have to depersonalize whatever happened, you know, to understand more, you know, holistically what actually happened. You don't really understand what happened, right? But instead, in their emotional panic, in their emotional drama, they blow things up. And mamish happens, not every conversation that I have has an element of this, but in many, many conversations, it's so easy to fall into this trap. You have to be very careful when we're talking to ourselves. There's something we don't like. There's something that bothers us. So make sure that when you talk about what bothers you, you contextualize it appropriately. You give over the information accurately, right? We have this, I don't know what it is, we have this insecurity that we feel like in order to convince somebody of a wrongdoing, we have to pile everything on. We have to make it seem like it's a bigger deal. Maybe sometimes it's just a little thing, and you have to deal with that little thing, but don't blow it out of proportion. We feel like in order to convince somebody, we have to blow it out of proportion. I think that's what the Ra'abag is saying here. Derech haksilim ha-mesach sachim sheyeiro atzmam kilu yishtaber divrayim. They make it seem like they're only giving you partial. I can't even tell you the rest of it. There's so much more I can't even explain. And then he follows it. Okay, what else? I can't even say. Well, I've got time. You let me know. Tell me. I can't. I'm too tired right now. I can't tell you. Okay. When you can tell me, call me up. And then we'll go through it line by line. Because the truth is they don't have anything to say. They're just making it dramatic. Mom, it happens all the time. And I don't know if you, this one also happens. I can't think of an example right now. People will start listing things. You ever see the listers? The listers. You know, someone will, I'm going to try to come up with an example off the top of my head. You know, so-and-so doesn't like me. Okay, why do you think that they don't like you? Well, because they didn't call me on my birthday. Okay, and they never call me. And they don't talk to me. And I never hear from them. So, whoa. That's all the same thing. That's not four different things. That's all they don't talk to you. That's all, but you just listed four things to make it seem like it's a lot of things that they don't do to you, right? It's a lot of things, right? So that's a similar tactic. They're not listing a bunch of things, but when they have sort of like that progression, this and that. So it's like a tactic. And you can tell that when a person tries to list things, oftentimes they're just, you know, they're grasping at straws and they're trying to, and usually, and this is my favorite part of it, usually the list ends with what? The best part of it? Either, like we said before, like, and other stuff, or et cetera, you know? They do this, that, and the other thing, et cetera. So, whoa, et cetera. Name them. Don't just say et cetera as if there's a bunch of other stuff. Name the thing. Let's be specific. I can't address an issue unless you're actually going to tell me what the issues are. You can't just say et cetera as if, like, I'm supposed to assume this guy's just a bad guy because you're promoting some kind of, like, long laundry list that you can't actually define. Right, so that's the Harbag. I feel like it's so insightful. I don't know why we have this natural urge to do that type of thing, but we have to be careful about that. They will be mishtaber divrehem. They will break up their words as if to tell you like a partial list, when really it's the whole list, and they can't really think of anything else to say. Divrei nirgan kimis lahamim vehem yaridu chadri batin. I don't really understand according to the Harbag how the last part makes any sense, but here he says. Okay, right. So I guess it'll really impact you because you just assume that there are a bunch of other people that have the same thing, or you'll assume that they have a bunch of other information that they're not telling you. That's part of the etc. Right, it's part of the ETC at the end, and that's why it affects you because you just assume there's so much more going on there, and it's happened here in the shul also. And board members who think, oh, we have to do this and that and the other thing. So why do I have to do that? Oh, because somebody once said it. Okay, so one person said that, but everybody else who didn't say that, it's right as they say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? And sometimes we subjugate ourselves to the minority opinion because that person is the most vocal person. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're representative of the rest of the shul. And those, you know, changes can actually, you know, negatively affect the rest of the shul. Because that one person said something, so we're going to assume that that's representative of everybody. It's not necessarily true. Yeah. Okay, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Kesef Sigim. I don't know really how to explain silver dross, but it means like fake silver.
Yeah, I don't know
base silver. It's like not nice. It's like not good silver.
Maybe it's like silver plating.
It's crude or it's probably unrefined silver.
Right, maybe it's right, unrefined or something like that.
Impurities
in it. Right. Kesef Sigim Mitsupe Al Chares. Right. Silver plated earthenware. Is the same as, is analogous to, and is an analogy for, Svatayim Dolkim V'Levra. I don't know, this word Dolkim is such an interesting word in this context, but Svatayim Dolkim, how do you translate Dolkim? Loving?
Ardent.
Hardened?
Ardent.
Ardent. Ardent.
Ardent, like love, like very amorous.
Committed?
Ardent, is like loving lips.
Okay. Svatayim Dolkim V'Levra. Dolek means to ignite.
Yeah, so odd and passionate then.
You think so? Okay.
I think it's passionate.
Yeah. All right, that works.
Yeah.
So, the Ibn Ezra says that the point here is that it makes itself look like silver. just like a person will say, or they will use certain phrases that make it sound like they love you, make it sound like they're favorable to you. But velevra, really they have a heart which is wicked, evil intentions. Now what's interesting about this is the kesef sigim is itself already fake, right? You know, unrefined silver is already bad, but then it adds to it that it's not really silver. It's silver plated earthenware, right? So it's like almost like a double layer. So that's why if one were to look at, let me see what I have here, the Mitzudas David. The Mitzudas David explains like this. Right, so but why do we need the sort of the two layers of fakeness? There's the silver platedness, and then also the unrefined silver. So says the Mitzudas David, really an interesting insight. Kemo hamitzapek klicheres bekesef hamu'urav besigim. Just like an earthenware vessel which is plated in bad silver, right, unrefined silver. Hinei ka'asher yer'eh haroek yasigim hema. When the person looks at this vessel and says, wait a second, this silver doesn't look refined. It looks like bad silver. So then what are you going to do? Yitein lev livchon bepnimiyusam. If the outside layer is itself pretty bad, then you're going to think to yourself, wait a second, what is underneath this bad? If the layer of silver is bad, I can only imagine what's underneath the silver. V'yim se'im cheres. You'll find that it's actually an earthenware vessel, not silver at all. Kain hasfatayim, so it is with lips. Harodfim achar avas habrios. Lips that chase after loving everybody. Ubelibo yachshov mirma. And in his heart of hearts, he's actually harboring some hatred. Hine kasher yimtza b'tzvasav me'uma ra v'im ma'atu. That person will eventually slip up, maybe subtly. They'll say something, or better yet, their facial expression will indicate that they don't really mean what they say. And then you'll start looking into it and realize, actually, they don't care about these people at all. Right? The same type of thing says in Mitzvah David, it's like silver, which is unrefined, on top of earthenware vessel, because there's something impure about it. You don't necessarily see it right away, but when you look, you'll see it. And then once you start digging, you'll notice this isn't silver at all. So it is with a person who is, you know, lavishing praise, someone who is very, profusely, you know, loving to somebody. But then, you know, I don't know, maybe they'll stop filming, or you know, the guy will turn away, and all of a sudden their smile like wipes off their face as quickly as they turned away. Man, sometimes you see this, you know, unfortunately. From where I stand in shul, or from, you know, how I observe people or whatever. So sometimes you'll see people greeting others, and it's like this big reunion and like a joyful, you know, connection. And then the second that conversation is over, the person turns away. It's like the smile is just like completely gone from their face. Mm-hmm. It seems almost like the smile was for show.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not necessarily like, you know, the most incriminating thing. You're just trying to be nice. But what it indicates is that it wasn't pure silver, right? You know, if you dig deep enough, so you'll see that person really didn't love the person he was just talking to. And it was all just a show. So maybe that's sort of the indicator here. You know, sometimes you'll see this at like, you know, some person is giving to a good cause. And they'll talk about it with glowing terms. And then, you know, and then they never show up to that cause. You know, they'll give, okay, we can talk politics, I'm sure, from today to tomorrow about this concept. But they give off all of these, you know, platitudes and promises and high praise. And then when push comes to shove, they're not actually present. They're not actually doing anything for that cause. And then you just question, wait a second, if they're not here now. So all that stuff that they said must have also been not true. They were just saying it for whatever other reason, right? So here, as I was saying, those little subtle indicators can actually, you know, expose what's really underneath. You know, that person is, you know, trying to do things that are, you know, surreptitious, you know, duplicitous, trying to trick you. But once in a while, they'll slip up, their facial expression will change, and then that will indicate what they've been all along.
Does it have to be evil, though? Can't it just leave out the word evil?
It could be neutral.
It's not in the heart, but
it could be neutral, but
accentuates it even more.
Yeah, so you're saying maybe the person is just not exuberant in their love. But that doesn't mean that they hate you.
That's right.
So, I mean, that could be true, but maybe that wouldn't necessarily fit the analogy of cheres. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would just be unrefined silver.
Yeah.
Right? Shlomo Melech here is trying to say a person with a wicked heart is analogous to someone who has...
It's just amazing. He's taking it one step farther.
Yeah. He's giving a more extreme example, I have something else there. Oh, and the Malbim says that this is actually even worse than what we said before. Before, what we said was the complainer. So the complainer makes you feel bad. The complainer hits you deep in the heart, right? The complainer also pulls off these tricks where he's trying to pull the wool over your eyes. But says the Malbim, you know who's even worse than the complainer? The person who doesn't complain. What does that mean? Kesesigim? Ulam garua yoster min hanirgan. Misha medaber echad bepev echad belev. Worse than the complainer is the person that says one thing, but inside means something else. Mm-hmm. Internally, they actually have, they're harboring some kind of hostility towards you, but they'll speak nicely to you. You're tricking the person to say that it's silver, but really, it's only underneath, it's only earthenware. Now, why is it worse? Why is it worth? Rashi tells us in this week's parsha that the brothers, when they spoke to Yosef, lo yachlu darbra l'shalom, they couldn't speak to him peacefully. Rashi says, mitoch yenusam lomdim shvacham. From the bad activities of the brothers, we actually find some praise of the brothers. Says Rashi, when the brothers did not speak peacefully with Yosef, what they were basically saying was, we're not going to pretend. We're not going to pretend on the outside like we love you, and on the inside, no, that we hate you. Right? Vayisnu oso, the brothers told Yosef like it was. They said, Yosef, we've got a problem with you. We don't like that you think you're better than us. And they were open about it. Now, it's not so, you know, it's still uncomfortable because they're still, you know, creating hostility, but it's better than not telling. It's better than harboring and letting it fester. That's even worse, right? At least the complainer is telling you what they feel like. It might not be comfortable, but in the long run, you know where they stand and you know where you have to make improvements. The person who's pretending, who's saying platitudes on the outside, but harbors ill will on the inside, you don't even know you have to do anything different. You don't even know you have to change, right? That's even worse because you don't know something's wrong. And this is this was my second drasha in shul. My second drasha in shul was, my second drasha in shul, it was Parshas Chukas. I spoke about why Aaron was punished for Moshe hitting the rock. Right, Moshe is told he's not going to Eretz Yisrael, at least according to Rashi, because he hit the rock instead of speaking to it. But it says Aaron also wasn't going. What did Aaron do? Aaron didn't hit the rock. So there's one explanation that I love that explains that the pasuk says that Moshe didn't just hit the rock. Moshe hit the rock twice. Pa'amayim, the pasuk says twice.
Mm-hmm.
So this explanation, I can't remember who said it, but he said that the first time, that was only on Moshe. But after the first time, Aaron couldn't have seen it coming. But once it happened, Aaron should have told him, hey, Moshe, don't do that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Moshe hit it the second time means Aaron didn't do his job. Aaron should have been willing to tell Moshe, hey, I don't like that. Hey, Moshe, you shouldn't do that. And the fact that he didn't was Aaron's problem too. So then my second drush in shul was, I know I'm the new rabbi, everybody wants to get along with me. But if you don't tell me how I can be better, so I'm never going to be better. So please tell me if I hit a rock, tell me that I did something wrong. You know, I said I'm new at this. This, you know, I'm relatively unexperienced as being the only rabbi of one shul. I've been assistant rabbi, whatever. So that was my message. My second Shabbos here. Till today, no one's told me. No, I'm kidding. No, Baruch Hashem, people feel comfortable. Hopefully, people continue to feel comfortable. And that's it is a it is something to work on both ends. The person accepting criticism and also the person giving criticism. You have to find ways in order, you know, we've talked about this before, find ways to give over criticism in a way that the person knows that you're doing it out of love, you're doing it out of care, and trying to improve them, not in trying to break them down. So either way, even if you are trying to break them down, that would at least be better than not telling the person in the first place. That's what the Malbim is saying here. The person who's pretending to like you but really has a lot of criticism just never tells you. So that's even worse than the person who complains, because you don't even know you're doing something wrong. Okay. Pasuk Chav Dalet. Bisfasav yinaker yinacher sone. So this is connected to what we just said, according to Rashi at least. The word yinacher. Anyone recognize the word yinacher? Like the word nachri. You know what the word nachri means?
Nachri was the side.
No. Nachri, like Am Nachri, or a Nachri sometimes is a reference to a non-Jew. But the word Nechar, Al Admas Nechar, is foreign land. Nachri means foreign. Okay. Or in Rashi's case, Bisfasa, with his lips, Yinacher Sone. He will say, make foreign hatred. Make hatred foreign. Maybe he will say to, you know, this is according to Rashi, this is the no offense clause. No offense, but,
yeah.
Right? Yinacher sone means he will make foreign the hatred. It's not because I hate you, or it's not because I hate him, but he smells bad. Well, that could be actually constructive. You know, it's not that I hate him, but I just can't stand him. You know, it's not that I hate him, but I can't listen to him when he talks. You know, it's not that I hate him, but right. So that's the according to Rashi, svasav yinacher sone. He is going to make foreign the hatred. He's going to pretend like he doesn't hate the person, even though he's about to criticize them and not contextualize the criticism with any love. When I was a camp counselor growing up, they used to tell us to give sandwich criticism. You ever heard of sandwich criticism? I don't know if they called it that. Sandwich compliments. Basically what it means is say something nice, then criticize, and then say something else nice, right? In order to make sure that the person knows that this is coming from a place of love, I care about you, I'm willing to say nice things to you, it's not that I'm always only criticizing you, but we got to work on this thing, right? So that's what it says. Bisfasav yinacher sone, this person is going to, you know, make it seem like it's not real that he hates, make the hatred seem like it's not true, but uvikirbo, deep down, Yashis Mirma, he's going to maintain that trickery, that hatred, that criticism. So this is basically explaining what we said before. Or alternatively, this is according to others, the word yinacher means not that it is foreign, but it is recognizable. Bisfasav yinacher sone. I actually see this one a little bit more in the pasuk. With their lips, yinacher sone. It will be recognizable that he's a hater. As we said before, they will try to hide it, but little indicators will give it away. It's not always what they say, but how they say it. It's not always what they say, but what they don't say. Right, sometimes that's the greatest indicator. I don't know if people saw this, you know, hard to not speak about Israel, but there was an old message that was sent out from the UNRWA?
Yeah, UNRWA. Yeah.
The UN Women's Relations something.
No.
There's a women's division. I don't know. I'm thinking of the women's division. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah.
But
57 days to do.
Yeah, they just came out with a statement, so they're under the spotlight now. But someone dug up an old tweet from theirs that listed all the ways that you can say no, right? Because they're all about, you know, listening to women who say no, whatever. And it was like 60 languages on it, and no Hebrew. It never said the word low. It had Arabic languages and Chinese languages and Japanese languages and all different languages that it said different ways to say no, but never used the word low. So the point is that if you just looked at it and said, oh wow, okay, that you mean that's nice that, you know, every civilization is represented here, but you don't see what they don't say. You only see what they do say, right? So here, bisfasav yinacher sonei, from what you don't say, we it is recognizable that you hate. Your hatred is recognizable through what you do. Say something by implication. It's not always clear and obvious by what you're saying, but if you're looking or listening close enough, you can see it. And this is also so much of, you know, bias is not explicit. So much of bias is not, you know, CNN is not parading around, you know, how they support Hamas. They obviously not. I don't think anybody could even CNN wouldn't do that. But the way that they promote it, the way that they'll show it, you know, the what they will say, what they won't say, is often indicative of, you know, an undeserved balance of coverage, mm-hmm. right? An undeserved criticism of both sides, that kind of thing. Right, so you can see through what they're saying, their hatred or their bias, I should say. Yeah, and sometimes they get it right, and sometimes they get it wrong. Right, it depends on the host, depends on the, you know, the issue, whatever. But the point is that it's not always clear. But if you're looking close enough, bisvasav yinacher sonei, and I think maybe I can't tell you for sure. You can see that the word is written bisvato and it's read bisvatav. Maybe that's indicative of it. It's not full blown. They don't say it explicitly, but bisvato would mean with one lip. Bisvata would mean with both lips. So even though it's written one lip, you read it as both lips, as if to say, sometimes it's subtle, but they really are still indicating, even in that subtlety, they're indicating what they truly feel, what they truly think. Uvikirba yashes mirma, inside, they have that bias. Sometimes they don't see it themselves. You know, whatever. Yeah, there's an interesting note here in the Art Scroll. They quote the Michtav Mi'Eliyahu, who says that if you want, I don't really see the connection to the pasuk. I can make it, but it's not clear. But he says if you want to make it better, so then start doing good things for those people that you hate, and then your hatred will turn to love. It's a basic concept from Rav Dessler. But okay, Chafei. Kind of moving here. Ki yichanein kolo al tamen bo. The word yichanein is the operative word here. When the person is yichanein, yichanein could mean one of two things. It's machlokas between the mafarshim. It could either mean chain, like favor. When they sweet talk you, right? When they try to curry favor with you with their voice, yichanein kolo. They'll say it in a nice way, or they'll say it without, you know, hostility. Al tamen bo. Don't fall for it. Don't fall for a kisheva toevos bolibo. They have seven abominations in their heart. Seven, you know, representative of either a lot or of, there's a specific list of seven, some in Farshim Moitu, or of seven, as we've talked about in the past, represents sort of the whole gamut of nature, the whole natural world. They hate you in every way, mm-hmm. right? That's what maybe it means. So ki yichanein, the other option is ki yichanein, like we say in Chonein Hadas. Right, like we say, Vayeschanan, right, Moshe davened. Mm-hmm. Right, he davened Yichanein kolo al tamin bo. When they're pleading with you to convince you, so then you know something's wrong. Mm-hmm. If somebody's really telling the truth, they don't have to try to convince you. Right, if somebody knows the truth, they won't feel the need to try to, you know, give you argument after argument after argument. I remember there was a kid in my class who claimed he was an atheist. Growing up, and I totally said this before, and he always used to say something. He always used to ask questions, or, you know, feel the need to poke holes in everything. And at one point, the Rebbe said to him, like, "Look, if you really were an atheist, you wouldn't feel the need to constantly try to convince us of your atheism, right? If you really believe something, if you're really telling the truth, you don't really have to plead with us. You don't have to try to convince us, because you should be comfortable with what you know to be the truth." So the fact that it's, and I don't know if this is Shlomo Mel saying, but I think it connects. Ki yichanein kolo al tamin bo. If the person is pleading, trying to convince you of something that is true, I swear this happened, blah, blah, blah. So then, al tamin bo. They're trying too hard. You know, what's that phrase from Shakespeare? I think doth protest too much. that kind of thing. So I think you're trying to say too much. You're trying to convince me a little too much. You know, no one, it's like those, I don't know, people watch true crime podcasts, just, you know, I definitely didn't throw her in the river. Whoa, I didn't say you did. No one ever mentioned that.
Like,
you know, that kind of thing. You know, they're trying to convince you something that no one ever even accused you of. So if Kihan and Kol, they're pleading with you so much, Al Tam and Bo. Kisheva Toevos Bolibo, because underneath all of that convincing is really abominations in their heart. Ticha Tikase Pasak Chavav 26:26. Tikase Sina Bemashaon. I did not know the word Masha'on in this context, but okay. I don't know what the Masha'on is connected to. You probably have it translated as like darkness.
Okay.
In 26.
Yeah, I see it.
Hatred is covered in darkness. Mm-hmm. This is actually connected to the word Shoah. Oh. Shoah, like darkness. Bim Masha'on, in darkness. So sometimes they will have that hatred, but, you know, they'll do it secretly, right? In the back room, they'll talk about how they hate you. Mm-hmm. And then they won't show it outwardly. Sorry, continue the same thing. So then the Pasuk says, Shlomo Melech says, Ti galera asa b'kahal. Eventually, their wickedness will be shown in public. They will try to keep that wickedness in private, but it will come out one way or another. You can understand this in terms of, you know, theological, in a theological retribution way. That Hashem will make sure that they will be, the punishment for them will be meted out. They're trying to keep it private, Hashem will make it public. That kind of thing. Or perhaps you could say, as we've been saying, and the word tigale is actually, I think, an informative word. Tigale doesn't mean, I don't think it means it, to, I don't think it means to reveal, I think it means it will be revealed. It's passive. No, I don't know how it's translated in the art scroll. It will be, how does it say?
It says will be. Okay.
It will be revealed, yeah, will almost be. Like passively. It'll happen naturally. It's not like something will be done, but it will happen naturally. You know, something will happen, they'll slip up, or it will be revealed, just naturally it will be revealed. Not that anyone does anything, it's not necessarily talking about a whistleblower situation, but their wickedness will be revealed, exposed in public. Right, because you know you can only lie for so much, for so long. You know all of the criminals we know about. You know, to go through the Madoff and yeah, whatever. It will be revealed. Maybe not right now, but someone who does things in secret, it will be revealed in public. Just a matter of time until the true colors show. Korah Shachas Ba'yipol, in a similar sense, someone who digs a ditch, digs a pit, Ba'yipol, this week's Parsha. Right, Yosef in the pit, although the brothers didn't dig that one, I don't think. Korah Shachas Ba'yipol, if they dig a ditch, they will ultimately fall in the ditch themselves. Meaning in the way in which they'll try to trap you, that will ultimately lead to their downfall. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be led in that exact downfall, but through that, you know, operation, they're going to, it's going to backfire. The Golel Evan Elav Tashuv, in a similar sense, that someone who rolls a stone, it will come back to him. That's an interesting one because I don't know if that, you know, works with gravity or whatnot, but what's the difference between a pit and a stone? A pit is something that you hope someone falls into. A stone is something that you're actively hurting somebody else with. Right, one's passive, one's active, right? So a pit would be like a Ponzi scheme that someone falls into, but a stone would be, you know, actually,
yeah,
you know, committing some kind of aggression against them. Those will all come back to hurt you one way or another. Eventually, we believe that Hashem will gain retribution for their actions. Unclear if this is referring to even in this world. You know, sometimes people get away with things and take it to the grave, I assume. But we have faith that Hashem will exact punishment for what they did. The last pasuk here in Perek Chav Zayin is actually not easy to explain. Lashon Sheker Yisna Dakav. Lashon Sheker, the words or the mouth of falsehood, yisna dakav. Yisna dakav, how do you translate that? Hates those it oppresses. The person who is lying. No, next one. Oh, wait. What? No, what's the first part of... The first part of 28 that you have, Sarita.
Oh, that's what Shekhar used
to
know. Yeah. Lying tongue hates those
crushed by it. Oh, daka, like crushed. Interesting. Okay. The person who is lying is clearly lying because he hates that the other person. I don't know. So the Rabbah has a different explanation of this. It's kind of interesting because the liar doesn't necessarily hate. Sometimes he's just out for himself. But the Rabbah says, Ish lashon sheker yisna hanid ka'im bishkarav. Those who are being lied about will hate him in return. Alpha bishlog maluhu ra, ach yisna em levad mivnei hara'a, she'asa lehem l'chashvo she'im sonim oso. Hold on. Oh, interesting. Actually, it's saying a little even more counterintuitive than I thought. Says the Rabbag, Ish lashon sheker yisna hanid ka'im bishkarav. The person who's lying will hate those that he oppresses, not because he's lying about them, but because afal pi shelo gemaluhu ra, even though they didn't do anything bad to him in response. This guy lied about him, said that he committed some kind of atrocity, and because he lied about him, claiming he did something wrong, the liar assumes that that guy hates him. And because he assumes that guy hates him, he hates that guy. Right? It's a kind of like a weird two-step. But, Ach yisna'im levad mimnei hara sha'asa lehem l'chashvo sheim somen oso al hara shigmalam. Ach, however, pechalak, a beautiful explanation, says the Rabbag, pechalak yahasem midche lezos hasina v'yasir rotzelomar, said a slick tongue, is that what it is? Upechalak, a slick mouth, will be able to remove that hatred. Right? There are easier and harder ways to understand this. I think one of the easier ways is you said something bad about somebody and you know that they know, and therefore you just, okay, this is our relationship now. We hate each other. A few weeks go by, you haven't talked to him, he hasn't talked to you. You just assume that you don't have a good relationship anymore. And then one day that guy comes over to you and sits down next to you at lunch and just starts schmoozing as if nothing ever happened. Mm-hmm. So you know what happens then? What happens is that the person who said the bad thing about them will actually change his mind and think, maybe that guy didn't hear the mean thing that I said about him. I feel bad about that. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have said that. And now the relationship is repaired. Now, it's easier said than done because the person actually did say something, and coming back to what we said before, you don't want to conceal a festering hatred. So if there's really something bothering you, you have to reveal it. But says Rabbag, wrote to Lomar, Kisha yidabru hanid ka'im divra chalakot l'asher hara lahem, when the people that were trampled on, the people that were lied about, who were damaged, if they speak chalakot, means like smooth, without any bumps, they don't harbor any grudge against the person. Divrei chalakot l'asher hara lahem, v'yeira'u sheheim bodchim bo, v'she'enam choshvim b'shum panim, sheyiyehu sibat nifilat hara lahem. And they don't think in any way that guy did anything to hurt them. So then it just removes the whole thing. And that's how he understands, ya'asem midche, right? What does the word midche means? To be doche means to push it away. If the person who was being spoken about brushes it off, and that guy who said that thing, who was assuming that he really hated him and therefore he hates you, sees that you don't care, the guy's going to feel bad about what he said. Maybe he'll even apologize because he realizes, you know, that guy doesn't have any bad, you know, bad intent towards me. I don't know why I said that bad thing about him. Maybe he'll apologize. Maybe he'll just assume that things, you know, let bygones be bygones and move on from it. But that's mircha. The person who's able, in response to the insults, is able to brush it off and say, I'm not going to let it bother me. I'm going to assume that maybe, you know, they're having a bad day. Something else happened. He's taking it, you know, out on me. I'm not going to take it personally. If you let it slide, so then you can repair the relationship. You can push off that bad bad incident. You know, maybe it's, you know, again, it depends on your maturity. It depends on the situation, whether or not you should or could let it slide, depending on how much it actually hurts you, or depending how much you can actually understand what they were going through that caused them to do that, etc. But if possible, so then you can actually repair the whole relationship entirely when you are able to let it slide. Not easy, but if you can, it's one of the strategies to get past that, and to, as they say, to fight hate with love, you know, kill them with kindness, as they say.
Yeah, but when you turn around and say pech harak, a smooth tongue is a convincing tongue, just the opposite.
Yeah, so that's only the Rabag. The Rabag says that, as I just explained. Others explain that really it's talking about that the person who is lying about them will hate the oppressor, and their slick mouth will push them away from Judaism. That's what Rashi explains.
They always say, like, the salesman with the slick mouth.
Right, could be. Yeah, or it could be someone who's Jewish and is mistreating somebody or speaking poorly about somebody. And therefore, the guy's, what do I need Judaism for? Or what do I need this for? This guy who represents Torah and mitzvot is speaking to me harshly like that. So then Yasa Mircha is going to push them away. Either way, whether in the positive or negative, that is the end of the 26th chapter of Mishlei.
Right.
Next week is Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. I don't know, when's Rosh Chodesh? Not yet. Rosh Chodesh is later in the week. So Mir Tashem next week, we'll start chapter 27. Yeah, I think we'll have next week. Thank you. Wednesday night I won't have next week.
Rabbi, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, Trina.
About this Crete siege.
Yeah.
So it's written one way, but it's pronounced another way. Then why is it written that way?
Oh, so usually whenever that happens, it happens in the Torah once in a while also, pretty more common in Navi, but it's purposeful so that we understand an additional layer of interpretation from it. That it's meant to sort of indicate it could have been like this, but it's really like this. So it's like an added layer.
So is it written originally like that? Or is it
something? It's written like, if you would look at Mishlei on a cloth, which is very rare to see that because we almost never read it. But we never read it. So then you would see it written without the Yud in Bisvasav. But if you were ever to read it from a cloth, you'd say the word bisvatav. If you pay attention to Haftorah, sometimes that happens. In Navi, it happens more often than in Torah. But it happens in Torah also.
Thank you. I've been wondering that for a long time.
Yeah. So, for instance, if you look at Tehillim, Perek Kuf, Psalm number 100, says we say it every day. We say it. What's the word? Mizmor Lasoda, we say, Hu Asanu, He created us, Velo Anachnu. So the word Velo, I think, is written Lamed Vav, but it is said Lamed Aleph. It's the same word. So then who even cares? You're saying it the same way. But the idea is that you can read it in two ways. Hu Asanu, He created us, Velo Anachnu, and we belong to Him. Lo, to Him we are. Or you could say, He created us, v'lo anachnu. We did not create ourselves. So the point is that we need to have both interpretations. Both of those are important. So in order to get both interpretations, you write it one way and you say it another way in order so that you understand it both ways. But yeah, sometimes it's tricky and we don't always understand it. One of my favorite ones is when it says that Moshe Rabbeinu threw down the luchos. In Parshas Kisisa, it says, Vayashlech miyado. Vayashlech miyado. The word is mem yud dalet vav, which would be read miyado from one hand, but we read it miyadav from both hands. So what's the difference there? Who cares? Just write it that way if that's what it means. And the idea is, at least one interpretation, I heard this from once, B'shem Rav Moshe Feinstein, I haven't been able to see it, never saw it myself, that if you think about what the Jewish people were doing at that time, they were doing Avodah Zarah. And if you think about the two tablets, one tablet said all the things between man and God, and the other tablet said all the things between man and man. Don't steal, or don't kidnap, don't covet, whatever. So Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to himself, really, I should only throw down one of my hands. Right? He's holding one tablet in one hand, one tablet in the other hand. So he should say, well, they're only violating the first tablet, so it should be, I'll throw miyado from one hand. But the truth is, they go together. You can't have one without the other. So even though it says miyado that he should throw down one, we read it miyado because he throws down both. Right, so that's another like tricky, interpretation you can understand, but only once you have the inconsistency of the word and the speech. So that's another trick, but yeah, that's why it's like that. It's always a riddle to figure out why it's written that way or not written that way. So sometimes easier than others, but those are a couple examples. Okay, have a good night.
Thank you.